It's so much easier to point the finger at someone else for what's going on inside of us. And it's been my experience, and it sounds like it's been yours as well. When you begin to take responsibility for what goes on in your life, you then are fully embracing the understanding that you have control over your life, not the outside world. It's not anyone else's job to like me, support me, show up for me, love me. That's my job.
Hello, and thanks for joining us. I am your host, Jeffrey Bisek, and that was today's guest, Sharon Valenti. We're all on the journey to discover the light inside, that beacon which guides us to live our truest, most authentic self. This is episode number 95. Your truth, my truth. Just whose truth is it getting in the way? And is there any way we can see our way through it together? It truly is curiously amazing what can happen when we step outside of our own business and embrace others as we willingly accept the space between us with genuine and authentic openness to simply allow what will be to be. This is where we travel today in this free-spirited exploration of our relationship to others with our inspirational guest, Sharon Valenti. Tune in as we discover how truly getting down to business is a group effort guided by equanimity or equalness of mind. On this episode of The Light Inside. You are listening to The Light Inside. Welcome and thanks for joining us. I'm super grateful and excited for the opportunity to share this discussion with you today with our guest, transformational coach, Sharon Valenti. Sharon is guiding others towards discovering the often debilitating and self-limiting beliefs, blocking them from seeing their light inside. Her program calls on us to ask one simple question. Is it true? Empowering us to embrace the simple act of acceptance. Today we learn how a little introspection often opens us to our own truth, allowing us to accept the truth in others. When each of us embraces this truth, it becomes the key to revolutionize our beliefs, instilling us with a more genuine feeling of connectedness to the world. Now let's dive into our discussion. Hello, Sharon. How are you?
Very, very well. How's your day going?
Fantastic.
Excellent. Excellent. So what are we doing?
I believe we're going to look at reframing our relationships today.
Love that. For me, what I really focus on, all the suffering in our life is caused by ourselves. And yet yes. We tend to put that blame outside. So I love giving examples of how we do that. And I also interject about the three kinds of business, which is yours, mine, and the divine's. And the only time that we can get in trouble is when we're in somebody else's business, even if it's in our mind. And I'm going to use that as an example in our talk as well, because when people really embrace that and understand it, so we'll be out for dinner and watching people, what the hell were they thinking when they put that on? You know, whose business is it what they wear? Whose business is it what I do? If my husband doesn't use the knife and fork the way I use it, whose business is that? Yeah. And yet we're so busy trying to control another. And simple things like when we get angry, what's beneath that anger, the true underlying beliefs are the not enoughness. And we don't know how to layer that down always. So it's like, my husband's name is Frank. So I'll get angry at Frank, for example. I've asked him to go with me shopping, and he says no. And I get angry because he doesn't want to go with me. But what's underneath that anger is I have an underlying belief of maybe, oh, he doesn't love me. Oh, he doesn't care. He doesn't think I'm important enough to go with me. And it's all unconscious beliefs. And we take them at face value unconsciously without even questioning. All he said was no. my mind got busy saying, no, he doesn't love me, doesn't think enough of me, da, da, da. And so that anger is totally misdirected. I want to blame him for what's going on inside of me. Or I could say to you, I see you have a plaid shirt. It's got a bit of a color stripe in it. And your mind would be, I knew I should have worn the green shirt today, da, 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 da. And all I said was, oh, I see you have a plaid shirt with a line through it. And we do that all day unconsciously. We'll be driving to work or somewhere to meet someone, and we will have an entire rehearsed conversation going on in our mind. And depending on which way it turns in our head, we could arrive there in this bad mood, and that person's innocent. Yeah. They have no idea we had that conversation. And have you ever experienced that?
I tend to not experience that as much now.
Okay.
I'm going to be honest. I feel like so often we feel inclined to back ourselves into those types of things and say, we all do it.
Yeah.
So when do we draw that line and take ownership and say, but I don't have to do that. And I don't have to validate it and justify it to others.
Yeah. When you learn to do that.
When you shift that and start to exercise your own volition, then you start to see things in that reframed perspective. I feel that's where we could really create power in a conversation.
Yes, absolutely.
We're going to talk about power, and that in and of itself can have its own connotations, its own beliefs. We're not going to go down that path today.
Yeah. And remember what you were like before you learned this over this period of time of doing interviews. You know, that's the audience that we're talking to, are the ones that are still, it's your fault, your fault, your fault, your fault, and my parents' fault that I'm this way. Rubbish. You're doing it to you every day with the stories that you, and I wouldn't say rubbish to the people, but it's simply
it is rubbish. Let's be honest. It becomes baggage. It becomes garbage that just weighs us down. Why do we feel we have to kind of validate that fact or integrate it? Why are we not allowed to say it's rubbish? Because it doesn't do anything but create baggage for us.
So another thing that we tend to do is concern ourselves. Oh, I don't want to upset that person. I don't want to make them mad. I don't have that power. I don't have that power over another person. If I say something and they get mad, it's because something was triggered in them, some belief, something reflected back to them about themselves. So we understand that. But I always take the approach, the listener doesn't truly understand that. That's why they're following your show, because they want to learn about that.
Our show is predominantly based in a community that's in the coaching realm. We're speaking more to that. We're speaking more to how do we start to create these effective changes for others? So that's our true listening community. You know, I'm sure we get from our interaction on the fringe a few that are coming in and starting to embrace that. But I feel a large portion of that is because that pattern belief, those patterns are what people keep migrating to.
Yep.
So until we start to shift that communication in our own interactions, till we start to consider how our own words are even interplaying, you know, do we challenge our beliefs or do we simply question and consider those beliefs? If you're seeing it as a challenge to begin with and then voicing that to others, that reinforces that idea to others that it's a challenge to simply say, why am I believing this? We look at marketing throughout all of the coaching industry. It's all geared toward so often pushing those pain points rather than starting to instill that new program. We're working on dualities that split our effectiveness that say, but you won't understand me unless I speak to the thing that you're creating that very block with.
You ever listened to Abraham Hicks?
I have.
Okay. So when they put someone in the hot seat, it's wonderful to see that ripple effect throughout the rest of the day. And I've been in their workshops and I've been on cruises with them and I've been following them for God, 40 plus years. But they used to say way back when, well, you must have another vibration going on. And it took me ages. Like, what do they mean? What do they mean? What do they mean? Until I started learning about beliefs, my underlying beliefs. And of course we get these beliefs. Like I talk about one-liners. I call them one-liners, things that our parents said, and they were literally one line. Children should be seen and not heard. Boys don't cry. What else did we hear? Money doesn't grow on trees. It does actually, because money's made from paper and we get paper from trees, right? So that just blew that one out of the water.
Yeah.
But if you stop and think, about some of those one-liners that you heard. For me, when I stopped and I look back on all of them, children should be seen and not heard. As a child, the belief I got, what I took on was I'm unimportant and I need to be invisible. Yeah. And unconsciously, that showed up in elementary school. It became the pattern through my life. I was showing up invisible. In my late teens, early adult, I'd be out with a group of friends and we'd be in a coffee shop and they'd all be talking around me. And I'd say, hey, what am I, a chopped liver? But it wasn't until I started understanding about vibrations and energetically what we give off or what we call to us, that I realized it was so entrenched in me. Starving children in Europe, I used to have my pantry full of expired foods and I realized it was because I was so afraid. So I had that shortage consciousness going on, right? And that's what money doesn't, what do you think, money grows on trees? Shortage consciousness. So I'm so obsessed with money these days.
Yeah.
All a lot of those things, but unconsciously, right? So to get to where you are today, someone has to present the information to you for you to start to consider it. And you have to be one of those open-minded people who doesn't think it's all woo-woo stuff, right?
Yes. Yeah, there in and of itself. We label that and then start to create that stigmatism. You know, I spoke to that so often through our program. Why does that become then the sticking point? There's something inherently valuable in there, but you start to tear it apart. You start to demean it. You start to form this, well, it's not acceptable to consider these things that are outside of a certain realm.
Because there's fear there.
There's fear there. There's fear. There's pattern belief. There's this whole stigmatism of acceptance that we're trying to accept the wrong things that aren't effective for us.
Yes. Yeah.
Rather than accepting the things that truly move us into that data processing of that circumstance.
Absolutely true. You know, I've heard a number of people say, oh, we're born with fear. I disagree with that. If I were to take a six-month-old baby or a one-year-old child and put them in the middle of the expressway, they wouldn't know to be afraid any more than a little animal. I mean, they just said they're goo goo gaga, you know, hi, traffic, right?
Yeah.
We have a survival instinct, which is attached around it's a startle instinct, really. You don't know if I put that same baby in front of the grizzly bear. Again, they don't know to be afraid. It's something we're taught. And where you're at mentally today, where I'm at mentally today, and a whole host of others are there and migrating there, to me, that is the norm. We are, as you alluded to, we're taught all of this from childhood through school into early adulthood. And so many are like, oh, you know, Murphy's Law, here it comes again, that little black cloud, it's always in my life. And they're unconscious that they are drawing that to them. You know, I'll say boo to you. I'll hide behind the door and say boo. And you'll come and say, oh, you scared the daylights out of me. Not true. I just said boo. Your mind created the boogeyman and ghosts and everything else, right? It's so much easier to point the finger at someone else for what's going on inside of us. Yes. And it's been my experience, and it sounds like it's been yours as well. When you begin to take responsibility for what goes on in your life, you then are fully embracing the understanding that you have control over your life, not the outside world. It's not anyone else's job to like me, support me, show up for me, love me. That's my job. If you do that, it's your love to give, your support to give, not mine to take. And the truth is, as individuals, we are the only ones that know exactly what that looks like. I mean, I would have no idea what it would look like to give support to you in the way that you want it, right?
Even to assume that I might want that support becomes that projected expectation.
Yes.
You know, and that's one of those lines I feel we so often blur is we're so busy assuming things.
Right.
Yeah, and one of those one-liners that can be effective is what happens when we assume, you know, there's a lot of ways that plays out. It's not to say that those one-liners or those pattern beliefs are always stigmatized and ineffective. When we reframe a lot of them, they simply create a new meaning.
Sure, and it's communication, as far as I'm concerned. Crystal clear communication. Don't start in the middle of a thought you were just having. Let's give clear crystal, because nobody is a mind reader, or a few people are mind readers. And in relationships, when you, rather than being codependent or dependent and become interdependent, you know, I think it's maybe Don Miguel Ruiz says in Master of Love, boy meets girl and he falls madly in love and he runs and he tells all of his friends she's the one. Oh my gosh, I've been waiting for her forever. The girl's doing the same thing. Oh, he's the one, da, da, da. They get married. And what's the first thing they do? Start trying to change each other. And it's like, what happened to he's the one, she's the one?
They're the one I would like to reprogram now. Right, become me. You know, and so often I feel that becomes a reflection throughout so many of our relationships. We're so focused on trying to project ourselves.
Yes.
From that egoic stance upon others instead of simply allowing and accepting them to be who they are.
Yes. Yes.
And we're programmed a lot of ways to do that.
Exactly. We're programmed. So we have, if you're familiar with Joe Dispenza and his work, every time we have that new, different thought that feels better and we keep our focus on it, keep thinking, we begin to create those new neural pathways and eventually the old ones dies away. I personally have experienced that. You evidently have as well, because we are in completely new thought patterns. I used to believe in something and I thought sat on a throne in the sky and, you know, had a big white beard. And I'm so different from that mindset today. And I realize as well, everybody is right. If we are, in fact, and we are creating stories and conversations in our minds all day long. And they're very, very real. And they're not true. They only exist in our mind at the moment. Nothing has come to pass outside of in our mind. So if you're thinking one way, I'm thinking another way, we're both right. The problem, as I see it, comes when we start to try and make the other person see it our way. Religion, politics, those are the big ones, and I won't delve into them, but when people are in each other's business and you will do it my way, da, da, da. Again, everybody's truth is in their mind. Why can't we just accept, hey, that's your reality, mine is slightly different. Yeah. And that brings me to the topic of forgiveness versus acceptance. Like many people my age, I had a very troubled childhood, a very harsh upbringing. And as I was evolving, frequently it was said, well, forgive your parents. And for me personally, if I am to forgive someone, there is still an element of holding them hostage in the back of my mind. I forgive you, but you really did wrong, and da, da, da. If I say, okay, I accept that is the way and who you are, I don't condone it and I'm not going to stick around for more. That feeling of acceptance, it's like accepting it's a rainy day. I don't need to forgive the rainy day, but if I accept it and I'm not dwelling on it, then there's peace there. And it's the same with arguing with what is, with what has already happened. How do I know it should have been that way or should be that way? Because it is. It's that simple. Yes. And people are like, oh God, that shouldn't have happened. Oh my God. Now who's causing the suffering? You are to yourself. But if you say, you know, even the worst tragedy is my son passed away and my saving grace that day was, how do I know it should be that way? Because it is. And to argue that he should not be dead would have kept me in a nightmare. Missing him as a mother, of course I do. But don't argue with what happened. I mean, it was parents' worst nightmare coming to be. But I also believe he's around me, gives me signs all the time. And I know when I leave this life form, I'll energetically be with him again. And everybody, that's my belief system. But again, it's still back to no buts. It's still back to don't argue with what is. We hear this so often. It's putting it into practice. The past is the past. You want a different story? Rewrite it. And it's very easy to look back once you know how, to look back on a specific situation that you found to be very hurtful that happened maybe once or twice, and you've replayed it 12 million times in your mind. you're the one keeping it alive. You are the one causing your own suffering. And if you were to look back and view it from a different lens as an outsider looking at that particular situation, chances are, especially where another person's involved, if you looked at the person, you would see that person very differently and probably have compassion for them and have the understanding that person said it once. You are the one that's kept it alive. Yeah. You are the one doing it to you, not that other person. It's already gone. Move on. Does it feel good to keep yourself stuck like that? No. What kind of future do you want? Then make it happen, because you're creating it in your mind anyhow. So, you know, for me, it takes the same energy to show up in a fearful mindset as it does a joyful mindset. You know,
if not more.
Right. Well,
if not more to be fearful, you know, because we have to constantly somewhat go counterintuitive to that survival urge. We're creating that resistance. You know, there's a duality in that to me, Sharon. We create first that perception of resistance and friction and perpetuate it. We continue to go back and ruminate over.
Absolutely.
We continue to go back and recycle those patterns. We continue to go through all of those steps to stay stuck in that place or to go back to that place.
Right.
Then on the converse end of that, in order to try to change and evolve past it, find ways to force our way through it. We look at the basic law of science. It takes more force to change something than it does to simply acknowledge it, accept it, and change toward the thing we really want to be.
Exactly. I agree. And not even personality. Let's just take something as simple as like a vacation, dependent on where you're at, your mindset. So you plan this lovely holiday to, let's say, to Europe, if you live in the States. You plan this holiday to Europe. You're all excited, never seen these countries. And you can sit there thinking, oh, God, it was just an airplane crash not that long ago. Yeah. You know, and everybody perished. And, oh, and all the terrorists. What if somebody shows up with a gun? And da, 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 da. And now you're not looking forward to the vacation. Or you can say, oh, my God, we get to go to Lake Como, and we get to, that's where George Clooney and his wife is. Maybe we'll see them. You know, I mean, you can, like, it's the same energy as far as I'm concerned. I'm either going to have a great vacation or I'm going to scare myself right out of it and have a horrible time because I'll be so guarded the whole time. How silly to do that to myself, right? Yeah. And yet, like you said, we're patterned.
I've got a great point I want to reflect on that.
Go ahead.
I recently, on Thanksgiving Day, flew to Atlanta. As I'm flying out, I'm listening to a podcast. I'm on a small commuter plane. You know, it's a little bumpy, literally. And I'm listening to this podcast on this plane, and they're talking about Captain Scully, who put the plane down in the Hudson. Oh, yeah. And I'm thinking, boy, isn't that ironic?
No kidding, right?
I'm listening this as I'm on a plane. What kind of reaction might I form from this? You know, and I'm thinking,
safe landing.
Make any perception of this you want, but that's so reflective of how life plays out for us.
Yes.
We hear these triggers. We see these triggers. We create these triggers so often that automatically draw us into that. You know, at what point do I take that volition and say, do I allow this to create a fearful reaction to the potential in me, or do I just simply say, isn't that curious? To me, that becomes the more productive reframing. Isn't this curious? Did I have any present danger? To a marginal degree, maybe. You know, we always have that potential for things to go wrong.
So to add on to that, in 4 hours, I'm leaving out of Atlanta Airport.
Really? That's right. You are based in Atlanta.
And I am going to have a wonderful ride, meet wonderful people, no bumps. That's so funny that you brought that today.
It was great reflecting on that, because in that moment, it's that very instance where they were speaking about what John Scully did that made all of the difference. Immediately upon takeoff, they had both engines go out. It looked very glum. By most circumstances, things were very dark. Scully said, I literally have spent time on these planes just observing and saying, isn't this curious? Rather than trying to form the solution, rather than battling the problem, rather than trying to force through in his mind, he just said, I'm observing what was happening. What happened in this interaction? How did this relationship play out? How did this pilot respond in certain circumstances? And just say, isn't this curious? By doing that, he didn't perform any preconception of what should happen, which opened him fully to the potential to say, when it happens, how do you respond? When he was in that circumstance, he said, all of these patterns, all of the ways that have typically been responded from the tower is telling me to return to flight and try to land it. He said, there's no way that's going to happen. And put it down in the river. What happened? He saved every life on that plane.
Yep. That's what an open mind can do for you.
Yeah. Right? Against all preconceived notions that is not the best scenario.
Yes. So that typifies humanity, really. You know, is that, okay, we're programmed to be this way, but no, you know, I think I'm going to trust my gut. That feels more accurate. And go with that. What are we so afraid to not even rock the boat? It's just show up as yourself. You know, show up as yourself. If every day people would come across like they are at night when they're in their jammies, right? And that's probably the most relaxed and the best self you're showing up as, show up every day like that. What do you believe in when you're trying to please that boss at work? That's grueling. That's exhausting. You know, that boss is either going to like you the way you are or not. We have no control over somebody else's perception of us, right? We just don't, any more than they have control over how we perceive them. So we don't have to try. We just believe we do. Again, training. We are all taught, all of us taught to put ourselves last. You've got company come in. Let them get seated first. Let them help themselves first. Let them sleep in the best bed. You sleep on the floor in a sleeping bag. Why? But we're, again, trained. So we are so accustomed to not putting ourselves first and letting everybody else go ahead. No wonder we feel insignificant, unimportant, all the other underlying beliefs that are there. And when we start on that path of self-care, I don't know about you, but I felt a bit guilty in the beginning. I felt guilty to just go and have a manicure and spend that money on myself, but I'd do it for my daughter 100 times and feel good about it. But it's that programming. It's not okay to put yourself first because that's selfish and self-centered. Well, I hope it is, because if it's not self-centered, nobody else is going to take care of me. So it's again, it's the new learning. It's the relearning, retraining until society is not going to blame us anymore for just being who we are and for nurturing ourselves, because nobody else can do it in the way that we need nurturing. I'm the only one that knows what that looks like for me.
What's the key to a happy and fulfilling life?
I think it's the fear of showing up in our purity and our truth. We fear the light.
That's what I feel like this whole journey has brought me to.
Oftentimes, the things that we think will make us happy will not bring us safety and security.
At the end of the day, we are a sovereign, energetic being who has all the tools already on the inside.
It is within your fingertips. You can create the life that you want. And the only person that is stopping you from creating that life is you.
Our greatest transformation happens from deep within. We're all on the journey to discover the light inside, that beacon which guides us to live our truest, most authentic self. Visit us at www.thelightinside.us to find out more. For me, backing that up a little, you know, do we ever learn a truly authentic understanding of trust? Until we learn to trust others to simply own with volition their self and take responsibility for it, will we ever truly have an authentic engagement of that trust? You know, or are we exerting expectation and validation towards others?
So I have a small circle of friends that are truly like-minded, and I have one very close friend, and we are always in awe of each other. Mm-hmm. It is a true unconditional friendship, and it's stunning. It's just stunning. I think the only, even with our dogs or cats, it's not unconditional. If that dog didn't make you happy, you wouldn't keep the dog around or the cat. I mean, we have them for a reason, right? Our children, maybe the next thing. I'll love you no matter what, but I don't like it when you do that, so go sit in the corner. Our partners in life, unfortunately, they're a bit dispensable or disposable, I should say. You know, when relationships break up, people seem to go into the next one. So when we stop treating people as disposable, that would be a good thing in my eyes, because that's your baggage you're carrying around. It's not the other person. And if you could both work on your baggage together, work on your baggage, bring it all up, and no judgment, even if you're judging, shut your mouth, you know, just keep it to yourself and and just don't judge. What we see in others is always a reflection back of what's going on in us or qualities that we have. We might not be, if I see someone and I think they're a real butthead, I wouldn't be able to see it if it didn't live in me. Yeah, I've definitely been a butthead. And today, if you were to come up and say that to me, Sharon, you know, you're a real whatever, rather than reacting like I used to and defending myself, I can get still and I can say, you're right. I can find that. Yes. Thank you for that. In my back of my mind, I'm thinking, boy, how must I be showing up right now to be being perceived that way? You know, because that's not really how I want to be showing up in the world. But when you can get that still and present with yourself, I say to people, would you rather have $1 billion or peaceful thoughts? Peaceful thoughts. People think $1 billion. But if you have peaceful thoughts, you're not worried about $1 billion. You're not worried, period. You have peaceful thoughts. And when people say, I just want peace in my life, what do they mean? They really mean peaceful thoughts. You know, just peaceful thoughts, not this turmoil that I create in my own head that I'm blaming everybody else for. I blame my parents for years for how my life turned out, until my husband said, and he's a psychologist, he said, how long are you going to keep blaming your parents and not taking responsibility for yourself? And that was like a dose of ice water. And it's like, he's absolutely right. Absolutely right. And from that day forward, pretty much, I brought everything on in my way of thinking. And it's a relief to be beyond that. And when people can take notice of that, I said about the three kinds of business, literally stay in your own lane. You know, stay, if you're reading a book or you're if you're reading a book or looking online at something, you are in your own business. Your mind is focused and whatever, you're just by you. But then the minute you start off in the bushes thinking about somebody else or the earthquake that happened there and you want to get all, let's start up. I'm sorry, make it a little fun here. What are those things, donation things online? Let's get money together to help those poor people that just lost their island. I can't get poor enough to make a difference in a poor enough person's life. So my little donation isn't necessarily going to put that island back together. I mean, I don't think Haiti or Jamaica are even back together from the storms that they've had, or Costa Rica. So for me to get on a tangent about it, that's the divine's business. I have no business there, and I have no business in yours or anybody else's business, just mine. And when I can keep myself in my own business, I truly have those peaceful thoughts. I can see life as just beautiful. You know, letters mean nothing until we assign a meaning to them into a word, right? And it is really, we are the ones assigning a meaning to everything. And you know this, you know, C-H-A-I-R, just letters. Ah, I think it's a chair. You know, now it becomes, but what kind of chair? You know, I mean, we all have different visions, right, of the same thing. I've often wondered, when I smell fresh cut grass, if everybody smells it exactly the same as I do. I'll never know. But you know, it's that same perception on everything. We can look at the same beautiful sky and we're seeing it differently. Yes. And that's okay. It's when I try and say, and if you don't show a great enthusiasm for something I'm like roaring about, I'm like, what's going on? Don't you appreciate it? You know, that's none of my business. That was shown just for my pleasure. If you enjoy it too, great. But the moment I see it, it's for us. Stop trying to force ourselves, our beliefs, our thoughts, our ideals onto others. Just be content to hold them in your own heart and let them be there.
Yeah, to me, it's looking at that difference. You know, as you mentioned, where are we placing our business? Where are we placing our focus? What frame of reference are we using? If we step into that, when we do notice things, are we looking at it through that lens of judgment or that lens of discernment? And then ultimately moving into acceptance, where we simply say, is it that curious?
Yep, be curious about everything.
Yeah, it's, I love that you mentioned looking at that relationship with the friend through the lens of awe and wonder. We just this week are putting together a program on finding more awe and wonder in our lives. How do we step into that frame of reference that simply says, isn't this curious? Framing that back to the Scully story I shared, rather than forming that reaction that, well, things are a little bumpy here, is something awry, just saying, that's curious. Is there any real threat present? Is my safety truly challenged? And if it is, can I really affect any change on it in this moment?
Right.
Curiosity allowed me to surrender it and say, there's very little I can do. I've submitted to being in this and placing that authentic sense of trust in others that the pilot has to simply know what he's doing. The pilot simply has to have the belief in his business. It's none of mine. The divine, ultimately, that probability in all things will interact.
And if the plane crashed and everybody died, this is, might not sit well with everybody. How do I know that should have happened? Because
harsh reality.
Yeah, it did happen. And people, I know that there are many people that have a great fear of death. And I wonder if they, like, what's going on? What do you think is going to happen when you die? In every religion that I am aware of, they talk about the afterlife as being magnificent. Oh, yeah. You know, it's just wild and happy. Why
isn't that curious?
Right? Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
but we fight it so often. What? Tooth and nail, to use that one-liner, tooth and nail, we fight that experience that nearly every religion, there again, what do some religions do? Weight it with this. You might go to the good place. You might go to the bad place. This might happen. That might happen. That uncertainty never truly leaves us, even in what we project in that afterlife, what we call an afterlife.
My belief on that now is that heaven and hell are what I make here on earth. And I've had hell, and now it's all heaven for me.
Very often.
You know, that's a curiosity. I mean, for me, my personal goal is, before I leave the physical form, is truly to have become the master of my thoughts, not my thoughts continuing to master me like they do at times. And the only way I knew to do that is to question, if especially when I get triggered or I get upset by something. It's like, what are you believing then? You know, what are you believing about yourself? What are you believing about them? It's usually an inferior, superior kind of situation. It's or that they're, I'm treating them like they're an enemy. And that's like, oh my gosh, I am. Maybe I need to start treating them differently. And I'll have a different response from them. And of course you will. And if not, then move on. Next. Just like everybody, you know, I mean, if you were in sales, we're taught next. You know, it's not personal. It's not personal. And intimate relationships, truly in Chuck Spisano, he lives in Hawaii and he's a psychologist, and he's brilliant, and he's the one that talks about the independent, codependent, and interdependent. And when you're in that interdependent relationship, you really are accepting one another. Frank, this is how your day evolves, this is how mine. And when we come together, we're not trying to change each other. We have great conversation and so on and so forth, and we truly accept each other the way they are. Me, not so much of him. I'm a little bit of a, you know, drive a little faster, drive a little slower kind of person, but hearted about it. I have to catch myself. But that is peacefulness in a relationship. And why wouldn't you want that? You go to work, you don't try and change your coworker. You go out with friends, you don't try and change them. Why are we so harsh on our intimate relations? It's unfair to that person. And you talked about expectations earlier. when we have that expectation of another, we are setting ourselves up for disappointment for the simple reason it's our expectation. Therefore, it's truly impossible for someone to live up to my exact expectation. And people, when you understand that, take that burden off that other person. If you really, you know, if those clothes on the floor left by the other person, clearly they're not bothering that person. But if they're bothering you, go pick them up, put them in the hamper. Yeah. But you're going to fester on that. You're just going to let this eat you away rather than pick them up or ignore them. Just let that person live their life. It doesn't have to be to your standards or expectations. Those are yours. Stay out of their business. And that was I could tell you, I used to be in my son's business all the time about his room. And my daughter said, "Mom, it's his room. Close the door." I thought, she's absolutely right. She's absolutely, but I tried to justify, oh, it's my job to teach him to be clean and tidy. I mean, he's like 28 years old. He knows already, but that's his choice at this point. He wasn't an untidy person per se. It just happened to be, I'd see something at that moment because I was looking for it. At some level, I was looking for it, which is what we do, right? Let me look for the flaws, or let me look for the greatness. Either one's just as easy, right?
That pattern is curious for me to look at, because so often then what becomes the imprinted pattern? The individual that then looks towards others to solve their circumstance, rather than taking the ownership, right. The very opposite happens.
Yeah.
Isn't that curious?
Yeah. Well, it's like the bully in the playground knows which child to pick on. It is, I truly, you know, you have to be following people like Joe Dispenza, who is scientifically proving what I'm about to say. There's an energy that we all give off. And that bully, who, by the way, is equally hurting inside, just misdirecting it like anybody else who has an addiction issue, looking for relief in all the wrong places. And that child who gets picked on by the bully, in the victim mindset, is showing up as a victim. They too have the self-doubts, the low self-worth, low self-esteem. So does that bully, but they're trying to force people to like them in the wrong way. And it's just totally backfiring on them. And that's why a lot of my focus is towards teens and young adults. Mm-hmm. Because I can so relate to that time of my life and how difficult it was and the shame and blame that was involved and nowhere to turn to. Had I known then what I know today, how different my life probably would have turned out to be. Do I know that for sure? No. The trajectory, though, seems like it would have been vastly different. And so if I can help just one person, one young person who has suicidal ideation, change their mind and get it, then maybe they can help the next person. Yeah. And so, you know, get that ripple effect going, because they now know that it's not hopeless. And when people are feeling hopeless, they feel they have no choice. They can't see that they have a choice. And so if I could just show them, look, this is how you find what you're believing. Now let's go question it. And they see that it was never true. And it's all they're looking for is the truth. And when you see that, when you uncover that hidden belief, any of them, it's gone like that. It's gone instantly, unless there's another belief underneath it. So let's say you have a belief. Let me give an example. Let's say you're holding on to a belief that your best friend, made you feel like an idiot at something, at a presentation, and you're believing your best friend made you feel like an idiot in that specific situation. Let's say you, whatever. And then you'd have to say, can I absolutely know that that's 100% true, that he made me feel like an idiot? And if you sit and think on it, and the answer is going to be no. He didn't do it. He just said something, and you said, "I'm such an idiot." And then in your mind, you probably called him an idiot too for saying it. You know, you didn't respond, or you might have responded. You know, so you made him feel like an idiot because you just lashed right back out, whether it's in your mind or verbally. And he didn't make you feel like an idiot. All he said was this. And you said, you know, you made him feel like the idiot, and yourself, you made you feel like the idiot when you believed that's what he was doing to you. Let's say you held on to that belief that he made you feel like an idiot for 15 years. That just popped up from time to time. That is fulfilling some need in you for you to hold on to that belief. So now when you recognize that, if you can sit down and figure out, well, it gets to make me right and him wrong. That's one need. Well, give up your need to be right. Give that up right away, because that's where you get peace of mind, right? You're not resisting something anymore. What other need could that be fulfilling for you? I mean, that's for each individual to figure out. Well, it keeps me in the victim role. Sure does. Oh, you know, let me tell you the time when my friend made me feel like an idiot. You know, we always find somebody. It's like, I don't know if it's Eckhart Tolle, Michael Singer, or Don Miguel, it doesn't matter. But they talk about people who get an illness, for example, and I'm not saying just anybody, but let's say suddenly somebody finds out they got diabetes and they could take stuff to, but oh, now people are starting to pay attention to me. I have diabetes. Oh, you poor thing. Da, da, da. Now, this might be the first time in their attention they ever feel like they got attention or love, and they literally will become their illness. And typically, more illnesses will pile on because now it's like, oh my God, you poor thing. You've got all those things wrong. And they are doing it to themselves. They can take charge, they can control it, they can get out of it, and they can't see what they're doing and the why they're doing it. And when you find your why, then you can begin to change. You know, what need is it fulfilling for you? It's fulfilling my need to feel loved, needed, liked, cared for. But it's your job to make you feel like that, really. It's
that
your
to
job.
Me is a great place to illustrate that concept of attracting those types of energies into your life. I'm not going to point out a specific reference right now on this, but the neural pathways are created that start to form that form that systematic coherence throughout your entire body that start to repattern that, re-replicate that, start to fall in line and say, but he believes this, so the sickness is the thing we're going to deliver to him. Becomes that power of attraction. That is such a great point to illustrate that to me. Yeah. And thank you for giving me the grace to kind of stop you and interject that.
Absolutely. You know, it works the other way too. How many times have we heard people who've had an illness, specifically cancer, and they've cured themselves? They haven't gone for treatments. Louise Hay was a perfect example of that. The couple in The Secret, just by laughter and by seeing themselves well. And when I went to the Dispenza week-long event, we did some energy healing on people that we had no idea who they were. And then there were people in the event itself who were focused on themselves being well. I didn't see it, but one guy who had been paralyzed apparently got up out of his wheelchair and walked. I mean, this is him seeing his own wellness and causing it to happen. I mean, this is like the biblical days of, what if it's not a miracle? What if it's the normal? What if it's normal?
What if that Christ figure simply had that understanding that if you believe it yourself rather than believing in me, it's going to happen?
That's right. He said,
going up to religious theology, we're not going to cross over the line and debate it.
No.
What if that becomes simply saying, isn't that curious?
Yeah. Look at people who do firewalking. They believe they can, and they do, right? I mean, I haven't done it.
I watched Oprah and Tony Robbins do it, so really? Why can't I?
Well, we can. We have to believe we can. You know, we probably could fly, walk on water, all of it, but we don't believe we can. It's somebody else can do it, but not me. Yeah. You know, we don't have that strong enough impetus. I do believe...
That's curious. Yes.
Yeah. No, Einstein, Alexander Graham Bell, all these people were curious. And if you think about it today, there aren't, as far as I know, many unknown things that were previously unknown being made known, like back in Einstein's day. And
so we think.
Maybe
we're not being curious enough, you know, at enoughness. If we simply become curious, and it's not about the enoughness, it's about the curiousness,
we might be
more aware.
I am definitely curious. I wonder about things all the time, you know, it's just like, and it's like, okay, it seems like a lot they're taking what exists and playing upon that rather than just coming up with a whole fresh new concept to play around with. And well, my belief system is just different from the masses. I do think that there are there's other life in existence. They're probably laughing at us, but probably looking at us as the
experiment. No, are we going over there? They can't get their stuff together. Why are we going there?
Exactly.
And that's a curious approach to look at.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I was going to simply frame to look at things in that notion with curiosity of saying, how much of our time do we look at how we think? How often do we say we're overthinking? You know, that's a common vernacular. Overthinking does us in is one of those one-liners.
Yeah.
But what is going on with the quality and effectiveness of that thought?
Yes.
Are we wasting, you know, squandering away that curiousness on going over all of this emotional rumination, all of these other things with looking at other people's business and forming those things? Or are we creating that space where we're opening the potential of those thoughts to come in, where we discover new discoveries with awe and wonder? Our mind has such an amazing capacity for thought that we're constantly trying to pour water on and put out its passion and fire.
Agreed. I frequently wonder what it would be like if we used our whole brain.
Yeah.
What could we open there? I mean, people who are geniuses, a little more of their brain is being used. Can you imagine if we use all of it? Oh my gosh, we are unlimited. So now that becomes a curiosity for me. What can I do that can cause me to use more of my brain, to open up more compartments and see what's there? I can't believe we have this big thing in our head and we're only using like a fraction of it. It's there for a reason, right?
I remember a study I read a while back. I may not be exactly right on this frame of reference, but our average thought takes something like 0.08 tenths of a second to happen. If change is nothing more than a thought in a mind state, I'm going to say state because if a mind is set, is it changing? If it's nothing more than a mind state to exercise change, why do we continue to perpetuate the notion that change is challenging, a struggle, and hard, and takes such a long time when we can change a thought in 0.08 tenths of a second?
Yes. So I would remove the word why and say, what can I do? Because when we go say what, the brain automatically goes into solution. What can I do to change this particular pattern I've got going on? What can I do to expand myself and others around me just by being around me? Well, first of all, when we change, and you probably notice this yourself, those immediate friendships that we had years ago just kind of fade away naturally, and new ones of more like kind seek to cross my path, things online or books. It's been fun watching that. It is the honest to goodness truth. As I changed on my path, the things that were drawn to me were completely different and so wonderful. And I remember an Abraham exercise of saying, think of your enemy and find one good thing about them. You're like, you're right, they're my enemy. And then when you sit and think, oh, they have nice eyes or they have a nice smile. And once you start to look for the good, you will find it. You will. It's inescapable. It's there. Just have to look, open your eyes, right?
What we bring into our awareness is the very thing we notice.
Yes.
I look at that when and have a curious notion about this concept of the five people you surround yourself with.
Oh, yes.
For one, where do we form that disconnect that we're basing who and what we become on others?
Yeah.
That's curious to me because volition and self-concept, who you are ultimately is who you become.
Yes.
So that to me can become a limiting belief because now you're putting that kind of element of blame or projection on others. I'm not doing the things I want because these five people are. To bring a one-line zinger into that, you know, one of the generational things I pull into my reference is, if someone else jumps off a bridge, are you going to jump off a bridge? That to me aligns in a lot of ways with that notion that, well, because these five other people are doing it, it's automatically going to form my belief in it. Now, conversely, by also following that pattern of somebody is doing something successful can become a viable path.
Right.
If you believe that what you're doing is of your own volition.
Right.
If you put the power of belief that unless I'm surrounded by these people, I'm not going to do it, you won't do it.
Right. That goes back to the beginning of the conversation. We are the ones creating the story in our minds, right? And that's all that is a belief. Our thoughts create those beliefs that create those emotions. And we are the ones in charge. Absolutely. So you can either, do you believe if you walk under a ladder, it's bad luck? No.
I've had some bad things happen walking under ladders, but I don't think any of it was luck. It was poor decision.
And if you break a mirror, you're going to have
that's
7 years
bad luck. That's a good one for me because I've experienced it.
Yeah.
And usually because there was some haste involved with my action as I did that. Being emotionally dysregulated as I did it ultimately changed the focus of my mindset where I wasn't being mindful. I'm bald. There's no hair up there to protect that head. I've run under a ladder and had, you know, caught the top of my head, injured myself because I was in an emotionally dysregulated state of being, had nothing to do with luck. I made stupid choices.
Yeah.
I'll call it what it is. I'm going to call my own bullshit on it. I made the stupid choice of not being present and aware and focused on how I went under that ladder, created my outcome. There was no luck involved in it. It was a bad choice. I got to own that identity with volition. Had I been in a focused mindset to understand how those emotions were taking me out of that focus, I would have created a better result.
What if it was neither bad or good? It was just simply a choice you made.
Exactly. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you, Sharon, for bringing me back into that reference.
Well, we do.
Further consider that very act of bad or good. That act of judging it and then evaluating it and putting expectation on it starts to set some of that table for the circumstance and exactly how we attract it in.
Yeah, it certainly does. Those are defining moments, aren't they?
Yes.
Yes, they are. Yes. And most of the time, we're not even aware we do it. It's good.
I'm not one usually to dip my toe back into the circumstances as frequently. Because to me, that puts you back into that frame of reference. It starts that loop cycle. But that's one of those instances for me where I can't call that into play here and say, how do we effectively realign that and simply call it what it was or let it be what it was? You better frame that to me and say, but there is a circumstance where you can move into that state of being and say, you can learn and grow from that. Did I have to create a challenge from it? No. Did I have to see it as a failure? No. It simply was what it was. And I learned that when you go under a ladder, be focused and present. If your state of emotional reaction is out of balance, is disintegrated, is being incoherent throughout your system, things shift and change to where you put yourself in the harm way.
Right. How do you know it should have happened? Because it did.
And the end result, you know, I had a physical bodily injury.
Yeah.
And also probably had some other circumstances going on at the time where I inflicted that outward upon others as a result. I take ownership for that. You know, my actions created that. It was no fault of the ladder. It was no fault of the universe. There was no magic, I don't feel divine thing at play there, forcing that upon me. I kind of have this concept, and we'll throw this out there today, that this divine energy out there probably wants us to kind of own our own shit.
Very much so.
I couldn't imagine an energy out there. I could imagine, but to me, it seems counterintuitive that energy is so involved in our business that it has to inflict everything for us. Where do we draw that line
and say there has to be some interactivity, as you mentioned.
Let me ask you a question, if I may. If you can recall the moment you hit your head on the ladder, you had things going on, whose business were you in mentally in that moment?
Probably everybody within a stone's throw of me and beyond.
And that's just a small example. When we're out of our own business, trouble happens.
I wasn't obviously focused enough on my own business to pull myself into that awareness of how my state was being, how it was going forth, and where that energetic alignment was.
Amazing what we do to ourselves day in and day out when we're not conscious.
It's nobody's fault but my own.
Not even a fault. It's just an action that we do because we're unconscious. You know, we're not slowing ourselves down enough to really be attentive to what it is we're doing, saying, thinking throughout the day. It's just so familiar to us. You know, one way to step into unfamiliar is let's say you're a right-hander when you brush your teeth with your right hand for 1 or 2 weeks, just use your left hand. Nothing will make you more in the present moment than doing those small opposite things. Put your pants legs on with the opposite leg. You have to stop and think about that. I mean, you will be so present in that moment. And it's a bit comical, but even if you've done it for a month, you still have to think about it because you don't think when you get dressed, you just throw your clothes on, right? You never think, oh, I'm going to put the right leg in first. You just do it, right? So
let me run this by you. I want to gauge your insight on this. So is that a proponent of whether or not we're comfortable or uncomfortable with those circumstances that we learn the new pattern?
I didn't understand your question.
So a lot of times in that circumstance, if we do something we're not familiar with, we view it as either being comfortable or uncomfortable with the actual circumstances in order to change.
What if you just stay curious?
Exactly. That's where I go with it. You know, and I'm going to validate it in me because I feel we put a lot of emphasis, you know, each of us so often, I'm going to frame that out because I see myself backing that into a corner with whether or not we're comfortable with it versus just, are we changing the pattern and accepting it in a manner that creates an energetic path that simply allows us to embrace the circumstance and become something different?
I think it comes down to a willingness to do that. Yeah. For example, if we move into a new home for a little while, there's some discomfort in there while you're getting used to it until it becomes familiar. Oh, you know, the old house, oh, and closets, you know, that kind of thing. And we're willing to go through that. But some of these changes that we're talking about in our brain in that regard, the way we think, the way we do things, getting out of the familiarity of things. You know, this is why people stay in abusive relationships. That unfamiliar, that unknown is so terrifying because they're believing they're ugly, they're unwanted, they're this or that or the other. Once that belief starts to change, the automatic response is going to be, oh, let me try it. Let me see. And Dale Carnegie said, the way to self-confidence is doing the thing that you're most afraid of at least once. And then you see it's not so bad. And then keep doing it. And then that too. So if you want a different life and it's so unfamiliar to you, obviously, the more you do it and creating those new neural pathways, you have to ease into, and it will become, that new life will become your new familiar and the preferred way, right?
I feel like this has been such a productive conversation.
I've loved it. Thank you.
We totally threw caution to the wind today. I had outlines. We had questions. We all had business agendas. I thank you for being graceful today and just simply leaning in.
Thank you.
And we both shared that space of curiousness.
Yeah.
I truly thank you for that. Where can our listeners reach out to you, Sharon, and explore their own curiosity?
They can find us on our website and our Facebook page, which is Blueprint for Stress Release. Stress, S-T-R-E-S-S, Blueprint for Stress Release. And if you want to reach me directly, you can send me an email to info@blueprintforstressrelease.com. Thank you so much. I'm fun. This is I could have these kind of conversations for hours.
I thank you because this truly has just been a moment of curiosity to embrace with awe and wonder.
Yeah.
I am in awe of your insight. Thank you. Namaste.
Thank you.
The light in me is lighting. Enlighten you is lighting up my day today. I'll get that right today. Light me, the light in you. It's all the same, right?
It is. Thank you so much.
Thank you, dear. I'll be in contact with you soon.
Okay. So
let's do this again.
Love to. Thank you.
Happiness, its fullest experience existing as we willingly step into acceptance. As we've traveled this road, this journey together, throughout the last two seasons of our show, we've often shared the essential importance of exploring and accepting the darkness as well as the light, both in ourselves and in others. Acceptance is the road to all change, moving us into alignment with an increasingly intimate relationship, both with ourselves and as we explore our relationship with others. May we all feel the warmth of this light as we head into this most joyous and merry holiday season. And as we turn our intentions toward the new year in front of us, here's this prompt for you. Simply clear some space and time in the coming weeks, holding it sacred for both yourself and others. Set aside your devices and vices, and simply spend time embracing yourself and those around you during this special time of year. That puts a wrap on our 2021 season. See you in 2022.